Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, glad you're with us. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on this Thursday morning live at Everbank Field on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. The Aaron Hernandez defense's Hail Mary apparently didn't sit well with the jury as their closing argument put him at the crime scene. And did you see the jurors? Which, by the way, were the jurors obligated to stand there and put their face on camera after convicting of first-degree murder a guy who has gang ties and, I don't know, may have some friends that might want to do you harm? Were they impelled to do that?
They were not.
Compelled, I guess?
They were not. But I heard one of the experts say that usually they come in as a group because the sort of gentleman's agreement now is that if you're a TV station, you won't camp out their house.
Gotcha.
So it's like you fire that.
Rather than to have that them chasing you,
yes.
Just be done with it. You could stand there, I guess, and not say anything,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. I thought if I was a reporter in there, it was pretty easy to figure out who was going to be a chatty Cathy.
Right. There are a couple of them.
And then I would have said, question for you. I don't know your name. I don't know your number, but I'm asking you questions because you're the one that keeps talking.
Right.
But instead they're asking, well, were people crying?
In the jury room?
Yeah.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw some of the highlights. I didn't see that question. But apparently that and Robert Kraft testifying that he said at the time, which I think is a little specious because...
I don't get that one.
Right. The night, you knew what night he was killed. So if you're clubbing all night, you're like, no, I was in the club. I mean, you don't have to know specifically the time on the clock he was killed to say, well, they say he was killed on such and such a night. I was in the club. I wasn't there. But, you know, that's the risk you run when you don't get on the stand and testify in your own defense, right? They can interpret it any way they want.
And if you're going to put the pieces together for that guy where maybe he's got that thought in the back of his head, why is he saying that? Like, if that juror's reacting to that way and then you say, yes, our client was at the crime scene, then he's like, ah, that whole thing was baloney.
Right.
Like, that whole answer. Whatever that little thought was that was growing in the back of that juror's mind, when you tell him that your client was at the crime scene, he's like, now I'm putting it together. Like, he puts it all together.
Right, and lying to Robert Kraft is not a crime.
See,
no.
I don't, people tried to spin the Kraft stuff as being like a nail in the coffin, figuratively, but this is a psychopath right now, Hernandez. He's going to lie about everything.
Of course he
so
is.
So it's like, okay, why did that lie, why did that, you know, supersede the fact that the girlfriend basically thought she was throwing away the murder weapon?
Right.
You know, and, you know, but it's interesting, you get a first degree conviction with no murder weapon, and basically they didn't claim to know that the motive was that, you know, he wanted to wipe out a witness.
And apparently, I guess, first degree murder in the state of Massachusetts, you can only get it under two circumstances. A, premeditation, or B, was it an extreme, I forget the other phrase, but they ruled it was an extreme case of violence because he shot him six times. So, I mean, what? That part I don't quite get, because if I shoot you two, is that less extreme? Would you be okay with that if I just shot you twice?
Well, it's like extreme case of violence. He chose to put six in the back instead of one in the head. Well, if he just put one in the head, what would have been the verdict?
Right. Would that have been extreme because he shot him in the head as opposed to anything else? I'm not sure.
So
either way, he needs to go away, and needs to go away for a long time. And apparently, whether that gets knocked down on appeal or not, I don't think he's getting out anytime soon. You see the evidence, Ryan, I was looking at, and Tony, the FoxSports.com article on the next case where they say the evidence is much stronger than the one that just got him convicted. They've got five eyewitnesses or partial eyewitnesses to the event or the events that led up to it that night. They have the murder weapon. They have a guy who was in the car, the guy who he allegedly shot in the face in the other case and declined to press charges when he could have had attempted murder and he got blinded in that one eye, said that when he got in there, after getting bumped and not apologized to in the club and, you know, was disrespected, which is really the crime of the late 20th, early 21st century. Disrespect is pretty much the biggest crime out there among athletes. But he said, quote, yo, what's up now? Then a racial slur followed that. And as they pulled away down the Massachusetts Turnpike, Aaron Hernandez allegedly said, I think I got one in the head and one in the chest. In terms of where he shot his victims, there were three people in the car. Two died. Another one was injured. Can you imagine that? I mean, how many times he's had to have pulled a trigger, in my estimation, to just be pulling away and not be freaking out like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, let's get out of here. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. Is anybody following us? Did anybody see? I got one in the head. I got one in the chest. You know, to have that presence of mind in that moment, pretty chilling stuff for Aaron Hernandez, and be glad you don't have to deal with that here in Jacksonville. And really, I guess they don't have to deal with it up in New England either. They've washed their hands of him. And the irony is he's going to be serving his time like less than 2 miles away from the stadium, Gillette Stadium, up there in Foxborough, as a lasting reminder to the folly of that draft pick in the fourth round. And, Ryan, we talk about, can you go too far with the character thing? You know,
no.
In this case, no. Wait, look, you can't predict that Aaron Hernandez is going to murder people necessarily, but he had a pretty, you look at some of the reports yesterday, a psychologist, it might have been for an NFL team, one individual NFL team, gave him a score in terms of social development as a one on a scale of 1 to 10, like the lowest possible in terms of reasonable social interaction skills and stuff like that. So, you know, he's a guy with first round talent, lasted to the fourth round, took a chance on him, got a couple of good seasons out of him, and then, you know, all hell broke loose with that guy.
I mean, you wonder if you're the Patriots, you're figuring, okay, you know, fourth round, this guy is a ticking time bomb, but can we not so much rehabilitate him? Can we squeak a couple years?
Can we rein him in? Or maybe. Yeah,
before he finally explodes.
But then they gave him the contract extension. Yeah. So they were, you know, look, sociopath, use that word. They fool people, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they're very good.
They're good liars.
They're good liars. They trick you. And they show the press conference his comments after he signed the contract extension saying how the Patriot way changes you, and I've become a better man for having been washed by the Patriot way. So, you know, a lot of lip service, a lot of BS, but that's on Aaron Hernandez. I don't know if there were warning signs to be seen in his time in New England, but certainly they felt comfortable enough to give him a lot of money in a contract extension. So looks like the Jags are going to extend Paul Posluszny for a year. Alex Marvez reporting that last night. And what do you think? Cap, you know, a combination of they don't need the cap space. But as you've talked about, you can't go to a vet if you have plenty of cap space and say, we just want to lower your salary. So could it be it's a one-year extension it's being described as, but could it be more of a rip it up and give you a new two-year deal where all of a sudden instead of making X this year, you're making half of that, and if you stay healthy, you'll be around for the other half of it and play another season next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that kind of thing. And, you know, one thing I talked to Paz about the year after the season, I mean, he said, hey, I'm willing to take a pay cut. Well, once I said, well, you can't do that unless cap, I said, okay, how about, you know, taking a year to lower your number? He was all for that, you know, because a lot of the money doesn't totally disappear, but, you know, I think it's, you cut it down 9.5. I put this on Twitter. You cut it down from 9.5 to 6. Now it gives you $40 million because you can roll over that stuff every
Absolutely.
Year. So, you know, you get a little bit of head start, and you know, it's, you know, let's say he starts the season, but, you know, gets hurt again or doesn't really play up to, you know, what they need, you know, then they don't really take a hit if they move on from him next year. So, you know, it would be interesting, let's say hypothetically it is year, but maybe if it's a 2 year extension, or, you know, let's say it's a little bit different than that. So it'd be interesting to see what the numbers are on that. And, so
I had somebody on Twitter question, like, why would you do this with a guy basically who's been injured a lot? Well, there's no risk. They're not going to guarantee him any money. I couldn't imagine.
There's not going to be any new money.
Right.
You know, new guaranteed money.
Right. So, and look, they love Paul Posluszny, what he brings to the locker room on this team, what he brings from a leadership standpoint. And when he is healthy, has been a good player, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not the best player in the league, but he's far from the worst player on this defense over the last several years when he's healthy. So go out there, prove to us that you can be healthy for this season. If you are, you got a chance to stick around maybe a little bit longer. And if you're not, we've you know, set up a situation that's probably a little bit more equitable on what you're going to be earning.
I mean, right, like his cap number for 2016 is 7.5. We probably figure that goes down a little bit. And, you know, then they add, you know, 2017. I mean, is Paul Puzolski going to be on this roster in 2017?
Wouldn't expect it.
Wouldn't expect it. So, you know, what they maybe do is, like, in next year and this year, he has $50,000 workout bonuses. Maybe you up that a little bit because you know he's going to be here. You know, maybe you guarantee some more of his salary right now for 2015.
For this year. Right.
So, you know, you just sort of do some massaging there. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's a reward because he still has 2 years left on his deal and he's still here.
I think it's
like management, I guess.
I think it's a simple kind of situation where you're basically making it easier on both sides here. Look, we want to keep you. You realize you're probably not worth the money that you're making right now. We don't want to outright cut you. You know you're not going to make that money anywhere else. If Paul Puzolski got cut, he's not going to get what's coming to him under that contract on the free agent market after the initial wave has gone by. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a team and Paul Puzolski friendly deal in the end. And go out there and stay healthy and you play as long as you can stay healthy. And, you know, I've had people scoff at Twitter even suggesting he could stay healthy. I'm not saying he can or will, but if he does, what's the harm, right? Then you're set up a little bit better going forward. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and he's not even in town. So he's got to get back here.
He'll be back Monday, I guess.
And or you know try to sign the deal. You know sign the deal, which is when you know then it'll become official that way.
Yeah, off season workouts get underway next Monday. Number of the Jags were out at Sawgrass yesterday. We mentioned yesterday Tony the Cat Jackson DeVille.
Yeah.
With his 4'9" shot closest to the pin yesterday, won the celebrity shootout on 17 at Sawgrass. And then, of course, Will Brinson had the video up of Brent Martineau. Brent Martineau, I'm sure, tweeted that out yesterday. The cat on his knees in full costume with the driver. You can't really see the ball hitting the green, but you can see the reaction. Obviously, he put it on the green. And cat tweeting out how he put it to 15 feet, where Baselli with a wedge in his hand put it to 28 feet. So probably plenty of other people put it outside of 15 feet, but he went after Baselli.
That's right.
In that,
I think Baselli won the competition last year.
Oh well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shot at the reigning champ's crown, I guess, or his throne. But Blake Bortles and Gus Bradley were both out there yesterday. We'll hear some comments they made after the competition about the off-season workouts, getting ready to get ramped up. We're 2 weeks away from the first day of the NFL draft. And with that, today, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships question of the day asks you, it's a two-parter with 2 weeks to go. Who do you want with the first pick in the draft? And when I say the first pick in the draft, I'm leaving that open to you to say, you know what, I'd like to trade back to wherever and pick such a player. I'm not locking you into who they're going to take at number three. I'm saying, who do you want to see the Jags' first pick be? And on the other side, who do you actually think it will be at this point in time? So factor in whether or not you think there will be a trade market. Right now, do you think Mariota is going second regardless of what team takes him there?
Yes.
Right. I would say right now that's where I'm leaning on that as well, that there's a lot of smoke, and we don't know if any of it's genuine, but there's so much that you think there might be a little bit of fire with one team making that move with Tennessee and moving up to get him if the Titans don't take him themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets have to be a consideration. The you know Redskins, Rams. I mean, there's a lot of guys doing. You don't work out quarterbacks thinking, okay, if they fall to us, you know, you're working them out because you know that you know you're going to jockey and get up there. San Diego's a wild card, obviously. That's going to be a crazy 15 minutes because everything sort of like falls in line of okay, Tampa Bay's got to take Jameis,
which we assume will happen.
You know, despite Ron Jaworski flip-flopping on a weekly basis. I mean, next week he's going to have Garrett Grayson going number one, but I digress. So then, you know, I'm sure they have, like, parameters in place. And Tennessee's Tennessee losing that Thursday night game here last year put them in the second spot where they can
get. Yeah, I saw you talk about that on Twitter last year. And you look back and say, wow, if you had lost that game, you'd be in control of this trade market. But at the same time, had they lost that game to the Tennessee Titans,
it would have been a disaster.
Right. So, you know, the Jags, that's what you balance out every year. You know, Jag fans talk about it, Tony, in season. We want to win. We want to win almost to a man on a weekly basis. We want to win. And all that's well and good. But, you know, sometimes winning hands the other team Andrew Luck, as the was the case a few years ago with Indianapolis.
So. And it looks like it's handing Tennessee the at least first opportunity to be the trade partner with somebody that wants to get the second quarterback in this draft. By the way, speaking of the draft coming up in 2 weeks, Mel Kiper Jr. has a new three-round mock he put up.
Oh, does he?
Just in the last half hour or so. So we'll let you know what he's got the Jaguars
doing. Well, let's sum it up this way. It's two strikes, Mel.
And also, Chris Trapazo, not sure how you pronounce the guy's name.
Chris
at CBSSports.com did a 7-round mock. We won't bore you with all the details, but I think it's interesting to see where a national pundit would put the Jags' needs based on, you know, what kind of players he takes. It's not important because you're not going to know if such and such a player is available at such and such a point of the draft, but where he says, okay, this is what's available, this makes sense for this team because I think they need help in this area. I think that's how most of these guys would do a 7-round mock.
Well, I haven't seen Chris's projection. I saw Mel's projection for 3-round for the Jags. I saw some other people. Why do people think that corner is an undying need?
I don't get that either. Grantland, we talked about this yesterday, Grantland.com.
Tony Khan is one of his boys.
Number one need on the team.
I mean, he should know better. He talks to Tony Khan more than his Shad does, probably.
How about that? All right, 6-4-1-10-10 if you want to get in. And okay, nobody's saying anything different. 6-4-1-10-10 is the number. Hold that thought. Hold that venom over there, O'Halloran. And we'll take your calls today at that number and take your tweets at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. And tell us, who do you want the Jags to take with their first pick, whenever that first pick may fall? Right now, obviously, they have the third pick in the draft, and barring a trade back. And who do you actually think it will be with the first pick in the draft? We'll hear from Gus and Blake coming up, and a lot more. It's Jaguars Today on this Thursday, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Last Wednesday for Trey Waynes? All right, Trey Waynes came in last Wednesday. The reason I bring that up, T-Wig texted me, said maybe the reason the speculation is there that corner is a big need is because Trey Waynes was scheduled for a visit, which he actually has already taken. That visit has been scheduled for a long time. And, I mean, the Jags, why would they pick that? Okay, Trey Waynes is coming in, but so did about six defensive tackles and a bunch of defensive ends. I mean, so one corner visits, and I don't see how anyone can look at this roster and know anything about the roster and say that is the biggest need on the football team.
I mean, like the 20 they had in last week, 10 offensive, 10 defensive, but also you narrow it down, 8 defensive linemen, 4 running backs. Okay, now we're getting warm. Yeah,
right. Those are needs. Yeah, and the tip-top wide receivers came in as well. Yeah. They'd certainly be open in the right scenario to taking a wide receiver. Regardless, I don't get too wrapped up in that, but it does mystify me that these guys taking a long, hard look at the roster would come to that conclusion that that's such a big concern for this football team, especially after signing Devon House to the money that they did, and he walks in right now at the top of the depth chart. Colvin, last year, just go back and look where he was projected to go before he hurt himself.
Sure, they have a need in that secondary, but it's not at corner.
And it's at free safety.
Right.
Right. So here's Mel Kiper's rules for his 3-round mock draft. He says at each slot, he's going to make the pick he thinks is in the best interest of only the team with the pick. In other words, he won't pass on a player at number 4 just because he likes the fit better at number 5. He's going to pick in the interest of that team. No trades unless they're already done. I note team needs. I try to address them, but like the draft, value can supersede need. Again, I'm not projecting. It's more a look at where I see value up and down the board. So he's not saying this is what he thinks will happen. This is more what Mel thinks should happen, right, in a dream scenario, based on what's going to be available as he takes each player off the board.
Sure, but it's based on his rankings.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's all we're talking. It's his opinion. So be it. Tennessee Titans do take Mariota in his mock. Obviously, Winston goes first, so that's why the Jags have the choice of any defensive player on the board. Here, they take Leonard Williams out of Southern Cal. I'll just go through the picks, and I'll give you his analysis of these picks. Leonard Williams, Southern Cal, with the first pick. It's not going to shock anybody. It shouldn't, anyway, if Leonard Williams is the pick, right? Might not be the first choice of everyone. I'm sure it's not. A lot of people love their Vic Beasley and Dante Fowler and what have you. Still some strong voting for Amari Cooper, based on the anecdotal evidence, but plenty of people would love to see Leonard Williams here as well, and many still consider him the best overall player in the draft. Okay, he's got the Jags taking, much to the delight of Tyler Devitt, Tevin Coleman, the running back from Indiana. Fellow Hoosier.
And that's with just the two running backs off the board. That's the third running back coming off the board.
He's got him ahead of Ajayi and all these other guys, Duke Johnson, T.J. Yeldon, name your guy that's not Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley.
Jaguars were one of 17 teams at his pro day.
Where he ran well.
Yeah, the other day.
I mean, he's built like a brick, you know what. But, you know, the knock on him is he's a really good straight line athlete. Look, then again, I say that. Some of the reports I've read are that Tevin Coleman's really good straight line-ish, not so much going to make you miss. Don't know if he's got all the wiggle you need to spend a top 40 pick on the guy. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, I'm just going by what the scouting reports say.
That's surprising. He go like, because I mean, Mel is one of the guys that carries the flag for running back should be devalued.
Yeah, but I think he's – well, I guess that's right, because he's not saying – he's not projecting what he thinks will happen. He's projecting let me get to his analysis in a second. The one comparison I wanted to make was the draft stock of Breshad Perriman, right, of UCF, where everything we read, Tony, for months was the guy couldn't catch a cold, right? He had all the physical attributes. But now every report I read on him over, I don't know, maybe the last month – flies in the face of that, and I see everyone saying, watch his tape. It's quarterbacks that were killing this guy. He made plenty of highlight reel type catches. Maybe he dropped some easy ones, but probably everybody dropped some easy ones out there. Rashad Green dropped some easy ones, and he was supposed to be as reliable a possession receiver as you can find. My point being that don't get caught up in one or two scouting reports. We don't know how the teams project these guys. And he is an intriguing guy because he looks to me, size-wise, speed-wise, he profiles as a number one NFL receiver. Right now, I don't know if he's got the game to back that up, but measurables-wise, he has that look more of a, you know, more so than an Amari Cooper. He's a little bit smaller. You know, this is big, fast burner. I think of Demaryius Thomas. I think of Julio Jones when I see this guy. Anyway, round three, he has the Jags taking cornerback P.J. Williams out of Florida State. We all know just got a DUI, knocking his draft value down. Let me just go through his analysis, and we'll talk about these picks. He says, slowly but surely, I'm starting to like the makeup of my defense and getting the safest player in the draft, a scheme versatile defensive lineman in Leonard Williams, who is an immediate force against the run and offers upside as a disruptor against the pass, simply makes us better. So that's that pick. All right. Number 36 overall is a spot where I can better justify taking a running back, even for a team that could use help at other positions, simply because I feel like he immediately becomes the best running back on the roster. Given that I think my roster is now in a position to win more football games, I can take a play right away player who has shown explosiveness and durability. Okay, that's an immediate upgrade, and the opportunity cost isn't too high in round two. Then he goes on to P.J. Williams. He says he's a great value in round three if he can show maturity off the field. I didn't have him as a certain round one pick before his DUI arrest, but he was easily a round two option. I think the risk is worth taking if we feel we're getting a likely starter at a key position in round three. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think they need a starter at that position. So there's really, I mean, if you take a corner, you know, you see a guy in rounds five or six or something like that.
Granted, they don't need, I agree with you, they don't feel like they need one, right?
But it's like, but I know where you're going. It's like, oh my, I can't believe he's there.
Right? If it's so good, could you see them making a move like that? I'm not saying specifically for him, but if a guy they felt was a top 40 value sitting there in round three, and they're like, wow, he's going to be better than anybody on our roster.
And throw this in there, too, and I know this is just an anonymous quote from some NFC general manager, but on his draft profile page on NFL.com, talking about P.J. Williams, the quote they have, sources tell us, quote, I think his best position will end up being safety. He's strong enough as a tackler to make the move, and his cover skills are what most teams are looking for from safeties. Now he would be the second safety off the board if you project him there. That's from an anonymous NFC general manager.
I would like to have Mel Kiper Jr., to add some validity to his three-round mock, suggest that as a possibility for this team. Because I like, once I started looking more at Byron Jones out of Connecticut, Tony, when you made that comment about him, some people think he could play safety as well. And if he were sitting there at 36, which most people project he won't be, but you never know.
No, he was 27 in that mock from Mel.
Right. I mean, so that being said, could they take a big corner and convert him to safety if they feel like he's got the requisite skills to make the transition? Possible, I suppose. So, what are your thoughts on the Tevin Coleman selection?
Right I'm all for taking a running back in round two. You know, if he's their guy, I mean, hypothetically, let's say the two main guys go in round one and they take the third running back. It's going to be fascinating to say, okay, give me the reasons why you preferred player A over
to
B through
other
F.
Guys, right.
Yeah. So what about his running style? You know, toughness, pass protection, ability to catch the ball at backfield, can be a three-down guy right away.
Got to be a three-down guy, yeah. Right? And at running back, you have to come into the league and play right away, yeah, I think, or it's a wasted pick.
Well, he's going to start. He's going to be on the field for the first and 10. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's got to be more than that. He's got to be more than a ceremonial first
snap. Well, he's not going to be a 300-carry guy.
Got to be a 250-carry. I mean, if you're going to spend the 36th pick in the draft, you better be drafting a workhorse, in my opinion. Or, put it this way, a guy who can approach 300 total touches, 280 touches when you combine the running and passing games combined. Otherwise, I think you're better off just waiting till later in the round. Or obviously, the Jags will have a later pick in the round, or early third round, put it that way, in what's supposed to be a deep draft for running backs. Anyway, that's what Mel's got out there. In his latest, does he have, Tony, I see he breaks it down team by team. Does he have a composite on there somewhere?
Yeah, you go right above where he starts breaking down team by team, he's got to look at it one.
Oh, I got picks in order rounds one through three. All right, I'll take a look at that coming up here in a minute. I wanted to give you the highlights of the 7-round mock I saw on CBS and get your thoughts on this, just more on positional value more than anything. But Chris Trapazzo, I'm going to go with CBSSports.com, had the Jags. He projected trades, by the way. It's a 7-round mock, but didn't have the Jags making any trades. But he did project trades throughout the 7-round draft, so it was kind of interesting. And look, I mean, it's daunting enough to try to get 32 picks right. Nobody expects a guy to get 250-plus picks right. But he had Vic Beasley going to the Jags at number three. Your thoughts on the likelihood of Beasley as we stand 2 weeks out?
I think it's a possibility.
It's in the wheelhouse, right?
Yeah,
it's
in the... and it would be a very interesting pick if Williams is still there, who, you know, on a lot of teams is probably the best player available.
If Williams is there and Fowler or anyone but Williams is the pick, I think it's going to be.
So, you know, that would then the first couple of questions would be for Dave Cola. Okay, you know, why Beasley over a guy that, you know, arguably is maybe the best player in the draft, and Williams, okay, got that established. Okay, why him over Fowler? You know, different kind of skills, more reliable, et cetera, et cetera. So it would be an intriguing selection if they stay at three and all those guys are on the board.
Right. I mean, from what Dave Caldwell's indicated, they don't feel this compelling force that, oh, my gosh, we have to get X, right? That they feel that they're in a pretty good position to not reach if a guy is clearly a better player on the board. So, to me, if he takes Beasley and Leonard Williams is there, I think he's got to justify that he feels Beasley is the better player, period, right? Not just a better fit for what they need immediately on this football team.
Yeah, because that decision would scream fit.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what it would appear.
I think even Fowler over Williams, just be, you know, I mean, Fowler has some eye popping clips as well, but you're also it's a tiebreaker. You're probably going fit there too.
All right, I'm
going
to take a timeout right there. We got six to go here, but we got to take a break. We'll come back to some interesting ones, particularly considering what under this scenario would be available to the Jags as each pick came up and who they decided to go with. So we'll get to that coming up. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you, and we'll open up for your phone calls as well at 641-1010 if you want to get on board. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Tomorrow's Friday, top five favorite Who songs of all time. Who in concert here in Jacksonville with special guest Joan Jett. What does Joan Jett sing other than I Love Rock and Roll?
You got me.
You got me, too. It's such a great tune. That was like a junior high tune for me. I remember that tune was big. We took like our eighth or ninth grade trip to Washington, D.C. That was pretty popular back then, but couldn't really give you much of a playlist for Joan Jett beyond that. Oh, Halloran, any interest in either?
I don't mind The Who.
You don't mind The Who? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Joan Jett, no.
Not so much.
Favorite, I don't have a favorite Who song. Like I like the title Pinball Wizard.
Okay.
What Super Bowl did they play at?
It was 4 or 5 years ago.
It was, yeah.
Try to remember if I was at that one. I can't remember.
I was not at that one. I don't remember what the venue was, but I was not at that one. Pretty universally panned for their Super Bowl performance. I loved them when I saw them in concert, but I'm biased. And of course, I saw them 26 years ago.
Right.
On what was to be their last tour 26 years ago. The Eagles did it best, man. When they had their last tour, and then they had the Hell Freezes Over tour.
I saw them on that one.
Right, and then they've since toured probably like 8 times since then.
It's like they made their big comeback, and they say, no, really, you're going to pay us this much?
There's a lot of money to be made.
We're going on tour again.
We're
going
to sing these same standards over and over, and people will lap them up. I loved it. I saw the Eagles here at the arena whenever they came. Man, that was probably 10 years ago, and they played here since then, I know. So there you have it. That's tomorrow. Today, Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you, who do you want to see the Jags select with their first pick, whenever that is, whether it's at 3 where they stand right now or whether they trade back and land somewhere else in the first round. Who do you want to see the first selection be? And the other side of the coin, who do you actually think it will be? Maybe that person's the same, one of the same. We've had a lot of Team Vic Beasley going on, Pick Vic going on today, and where people want and think it will be Vic Beasley. I don't know if they're trying to wish it into being or not. But that's just the case that I'm seeing right now. Let's go to the phones and get Steve up. He's got a question about Paul Posluszny. Then we'll get back to that 7-round mock with the Jags. Steve, you're on Jaguars today. Go ahead, please.
Morning, fellas.
Morning.
I have a thing I don't understand about the Jaguars. You give Cuz a 1-year extension, but you don't re-sign JT Thomas. Now, their whole philosophy, what they see us as a fan is, well, we're all about competition. Now you need depth at that position. And looking at how JT played, he gave great competition. Now, I don't have a problem with the front of Dan Scooter, but my problem is Dan Scooter. When you play a national meeting, you hope he can beat the auto. But didn't we just do this with Watson? And didn't JT Thomas come in and fill in pretty decently at auto, and not just auto, but middle, and all linebacker positions? So I'm trying to figure out and understand. You don't learn from not resigning Darius Smith. You gave Russell Allen a chance, who was purely a backup in my eyes. But you don't keep JT Thomas and give great competition and great depth. So what are we doing? I haven't seen local or national media write this.
All right.
Hey. Okay, that part pissed me
off.
Calm
down.
All right, couple points. I agree with some of your points. I mean, we've been on the linebacker thing since the end of the season, how they needed to address it. And one of the disagreements I had with people in this building is I thought Dakota Watson was a farce from the start. And they said, oh, he's going to come around. He never did. He came here hurt, and he was a bust. He was a terrible pick or terrible signing. They weren't going to pay JT Thomas what he got from the Giants, Tony, which was?
3 for 10.
Okay. JT Thomas played one game at the auto last year before he moved inside because Posluszny got hurt. I agree with the fact that when they signed Scooter, they sounded a little bit like they did when they signed Watson, but I don't think it's as big a projection because Scooter has at least played that position more.
And let me just point out that the day after the initial waiver of free agency, when we talked to all these guys, two or three of them mentioned on their own, brought up to Tony and I, wow, we got Scooter. That guy can play. Unprompted. Not on the air, just unprompted. Like, wow, Scooter is a player. So certainly much more buzz in that regard than you had for Dakota Watson.
Yeah, and a little caller's point on competition is they feel like they maybe on the backup side, I mean, you got Telvin's a starter. They think Scooter's a starter. Paz is going to be a starter. Well, then I think they're definitely going to draft one. I think they draft one in the second or third round whenever they don't go running back. So I think they're retooling that position, and it's going to have a different look this year outside of the top three starters.
Look, I don't think there's competition and there's not competition. JT Thomas is not going to push a healthy Paul Posluszny out of the middle linebacker spot. He's had that opportunity. They knew what they had of JT Thomas. I think they probably, and from what I gathered, people around the league were surprised how much money he got. In fact, I saw an article that said one of the most eye-popping or head-scratching signings was the contract that the Giants gave to JT Thomas. I thought he was a pretty versatile player, and I thought he was a pretty good player. Clearly, they didn't feel he was worth that much money, and they can get, as you pointed out, Ryan, maybe a mid-round pick for a lot less to come in and give them the same level of competition.
And at the owners' meetings, Tom Coughlin was talking about JT in terms of, well, he's a great special teamer. That's not special team money.
Right.
You know, so, be interesting, you know, what does he do with the Giants? I mean, they certainly, the Jags certainly aren't going to pay that kind of money for a core special teamer. So, you know, they moved on to the next guy.
Yeah. But I thought reasonable points certainly, there, Steve. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go through the rest of these picks. By the way, Chris Trapazzo did a 7-round mock at CBSSports.com. Let me just give you the comments he made about Vic Beasley, because he only made comments on the first couple of rounds. Had the Jags taken Beasley, said he's as close to a Von Miller clone as we've seen since the Broncos star was drafted in 2011. He doesn't have traditional 4-3 end size, though. It's fine. Like Miller, Beasley's a freakish athlete and an explosive, refined pass rusher. So that's what he had to say about Beasley.
Okay.
Second round. And let me give you who's on the board here. Todd Gurley's on the board.
Ho!
The Jaguars walk the card up to the podium and select, out of the University of Oklahoma, wide receiver Doriel Green Beckham.
Whoa.
Yes, according to that, this is one guy's projection, his comments. The Jaguars feel Green Beckham's upside, and this is him saying, he's not reporting this, he's saying this is, under this scenario, what the rationale would be. The Jaguars feel Green Beckham's upside outweighs his off-field concerns. At this point, Blake Bortles is pumped, says Trapazzo. Jaguar
That's
fans
right.
riot when Todd Gurley is not selected with the 36th pick
in the
draft.
Let's go select another wide receiver who may play himself out of being able to be in the league because of how stupid he is away from the field. Let's go do that, because this franchise...
That's great.
Is the
one, I didn't even have to say that.
Right.
You did.
This franchise is the one that's going to put itself in that position again.
Right.
Especially if they have the opportunity to go get a guy like
Todd
Gurley.
Especially, that's the galling point, right? Gurley's sitting there. He had Gurley going 55th overall. I forget what team was. I cut and pasted some notes on the Jags here.
He's really worried about that ACL.
I guess he is. So,
where's he got Melvin Gordon going?
He had him in the first round. I can't recall the team.
Okay.
But he was off the board. He's got third round, Jags, 67th overall pick, taking Ronis Grasu, the center out of Oregon. A lot of people like this guy. Well, I've seen him projected particularly to the Eagles in mock drafts because the connection with Chip Kelly, but nonetheless.
Because he went to Oregon.
Look, in part, but he is a well-regarded center prospect, and he'd be a guy who can come in and push for a starting job, you would think, right away if they were to draft the guy in that range. Still haven't taken a running back? Well, we'll remedy that in round four. 103rd selection overall. Hey, there's T.J. Yeldon on the board. Jaguars walk the card up to the podium. And they select, out of the University of South Carolina, running back Mike Davis. Good player.
I like Mike Davis.
He's a good player. I think, again,
he's a walking injury.
There would be head scratching in abundance why T.J. Yeldon wasn't the pick. Doesn't mean that's right. But
now we're having fun with this now. Let's say they pick Mike Davis.
Yes.
And this is a day later now. My first question is, okay, let's get back to Gurley for a second.
He would never let it go. wrapping it up, because the players aren't as important now at this point as the positions. In the fifth round, pick 139, has the Jags taking Xavier Williams, a defensive tackle out of Northern Iowa. Sixth round, Jeff Luck, the inside linebacker. We talked about linebacker out of Cincinnati with pick 180.
Senior Bowl player.
And then Justin Coleman, a corner. Because they got to have a corner, apparently, now. It's contractually obligated. The Jags must take a corner out of Tennessee with the 220th selection, round 7. So there you have it. That's your 7-round mock. Doriel Green Beckham. Could you imagine? I mean, Green Beckham may turn out to be a star.
Could be.
My goodness. Dave Caldwell, you're imaginary cojones, according to Chris Trapazzo, to bypass Todd Gurley. And walk that card up with Doriel Green Beckham Jr.'s name on it. So don't think it's going to play out that way, although Vic Beasley could play out that way. Who knows? Maybe he'll hit on some of those later picks as well. Don't know how that whole thing's going to shake out, but that's just the way it goes. And he did, as I said, project trades in this whole deal. Let me see quickly. He had Bud Dupree going 21st, Melvin Gordon he had going 26. Apparently now, again, because Peter King put in his Monday morning quarterback column, definitive statement, Melvin Gordon will not get past the Ravens at 26. As if he...
He may not get past the Chargers at 16.
He may not, but yeah. He said it like Ozzie Newsome told me this, okay? That's not what he reported, but that's the way he said it. That's how definitive he was. So now you will not see a mock draft that doesn't have Melvin Gordon going to the top 26 picks because everybody feeds off everybody else's intel as far as that whole stuff goes. Yeah, just for fun and entertainment purposes only, thank goodness mock draft season will come to a close. Your one-round mock today, who do you want to see picked by the Jags with their first selection? Who do you think will be selected by the Jags? Tweet us your results or your answers on that at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony. We'll come back with this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. Still to come, we'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles talking yesterday as Jack got ready for off-season workouts. They are out at Sawgrass. We'll hear some of that sound coming your way as well. As Jaguars Today continues, we're live at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, chock full of birthdays. April 16th, 1928, Hall of Famer Dick Night Train Lane comes into the league, plays with the Rams, even though he's probably best known with the Lions, played as many years with the Chicago Cardinals as he did with the Detroit Lions. 68 interceptions in a career that had 7 Pro Bowl appearances. He was on the All-Decade team of the 1950s and inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1974. 1970 birthday, Steve Entman, first overall pick in the 1992 NFL draft by Indianapolis. Remember that one? Do you remember who? Indy had the first and second picks that year.
Quentin Corriott.
Very nice. Out of?
Texas
A&M. Very nice job by you there, Ryan O'Halloran. Steve Entman went on to start 19 games in his entire NFL career.
Ooh.
Brutal. Brutal. And
wasn't the Tony Mandarich draft, was it?
No, because Mandarich went second overall in whatever draft he was in. It was Entman, Corriott. I don't know what came after that, but neither one of those guys really lived up to their billing. Certainly not Entman. In 1982, Jonathan Vilma, born on this date, the 12th overall pick out of the U in the 2004 NFL draft by the New York Jets, and a 3-time Pro Bowler, also a victim of Roger Goodell's punishments during, what was the gate on that one, Tony?
Bounty Gate.
Bounty Gate, that's right, Bounty Gate. So many gates. As somebody pointed out yesterday, okay, the prosecutors in the Aaron Hernandez case brought that thing to trial. The trial was conducted in less time than it's taken for the Deflategate investigation to conclude, because it hasn't concluded.
Nope.
I mean, really? What more is there to do? Who else do you need to talk to? Unbelievable.
I don't know.
So I guess they're waiting, I don't know, for...
I bet tomorrow at 5 is the...
Tomorrow at 5, you
that's
think?
My guess.
That's a good guess.
Because next week you have the schedule, Wednesday or Thursday, and they can't do it the next week. You don't want to do it during...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Do they bury it on on a time when there is something else really big happening, and then nobody even pays attention to it at all?
Yeah. So do it Friday at 5, news dump. You know, if they're waiting this long, they're probably not going to dock anybody a draft pick, chiefly, obviously, New England.
You would not think that would be the case at this point in time. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or check him out online at jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services that is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
We talked about this a little bit at the top of the show, but the jurors in the murder trial of Aaron Hernandez, who submitted a guilty verdict for Hernandez in the murder of Odin Lloyd, spoke to the media yesterday after the verdict was read. One juror pointed out the testimony of Patriots owner Robert Kraft, specifically saying that Hernandez has answered to Kraft about hoping to find out the time of the murder because he couldn't have done it. Because he was in the club was key for him, given that in court they never established a specific time the events happened that led to Odin Lloyd's death. And to that juror, Hernandez's answer made it sound like he knew something nobody else did, which is an even easier assumption to make after the defense tells you their client was there at the scene of the shooting, which they did in their closing arguments. The jurors said that they were shocked by that admission from the defense. New Buffalo Bills head coach Rex Ryan had some fun with Tom Brady's first pitch at Fenway Park earlier this week. If you haven't seen the pitch, Brady bounced it to the plate. Ryan started his press conference yesterday saying, quote, "I think there's an obvious thing that we should talk about first. My pitch actually made it to the plate. It was a little wide, but I understand somebody bounced it. I'm not sure who it was, but Tom needs to keep his elbow up a little bit more, I think." That was Rex Ryan. Apparently he threw a pitch out for Triple A Buffalo and got it over the plate.
Good for Rex.
Good for Rex.
Yeah, good for Rex.
Always stabbing a little. He's always poking.
Good for Brady. Were we talking about this on the air yesterday? Were you talking about Gruden? No, it was Tyler and I were talking about it yesterday after the show. I was over at the studio. And I haven't seen the QB camp with Winston, but apparently, was it on that, Tyler, or the Path to the Draft show where he was marveling at Jameis Winston making throws, pressure throws from right field?
I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but I do know that Gruden was talking about Jameis's baseball days and says his ability to throw people out from the outfield to third base is going to be, you know, one of those close, quick twitch situations in the NFL.
It's a quick twitch situation. I guess that means Brady can't handle the pressure, right, of making that 60-foot throw.
He's going to fold.
That Brady guy is not going to pan out.
You won, sport bum.
Seriously. Ryan, well, Tony and I we didn't get deep into it yesterday, so we could talk about it for a minute here. The speculation that Phillip Rivers could get dealt to the Tennessee Titans. It got started, really, because Rivers has indicated he's not going to sign a contract extension, at least right now, until he sees where the franchise is headed, because he feels he's a family man, he's got seven kids, that he loves the San Diego lifestyle, does not want anything to do with the Los Angeles lifestyle. That's his prerogative, and there's certainly a strong feeling that San Diego could end up as the L.A. Chargers next year, and he doesn't want to uproot the family and move them to L.A., and wouldn't be happy with that situation, so which has led to speculation. That and the fact that the Chargers have worked out Marcus Mariota, that it could be a Rivers as a centerpiece of a deal to get up to number two type situation. I saw one write-up, and I can't remember who did it. I'm reading so many different pieces, but they basically said if the Chargers were to do that, they'd get the second overall pick and Tennessee's third rounder, but they'd have to give up their second. In other words, Rivers wouldn't be enough for the second overall pick. They'd also have to give Tennessee a bump from round three up into mid round two. What are your thoughts on which team would win if either team would win that deal?
Well, I think you know, it would be one of those things where the immediate winner would be Tennessee because they get the established quarterback. They get an instant identity. Rivers has a history with Chuckles, Wilson, Hunt. So from their year, it was the Chargers. So, and I wrote this yesterday, Rivers has carved up the Jaguars, including last year. So, you know, Tennessee moves into relevance in the AFC South. If he has 3 years left, 4 years left, whatever. To me, I make the deal because you're taking a sure thing instead of Mariota.
And you got Mettenberger in the wings.
Yes.
Right? If you like Mettenberger as much as, you know, the indications are they like Mettenberger, you give him a little bit more time to get seasoned behind a guy like Phillip Rivers. You're not locked into a long-term deal. You would, if Rivers didn't want to re-sign, you could always slap a franchise tag, and I'm sure San Diego could do the same thing if they wanted to.
Yeah. The part I don't buy is like, well, I don't want to uproot my family. Well, you know, you're going to move somewhere.
But it's not the uprooting. He said it's not the uprooting. Yeah. It's specifically Los Angeles. He doesn't like L.A.
Well, you know,
I mean, that's his prerogative.
That's his. To me, this reeks of some backroom leaking. Like the Chargers are ready
possibly
to move on from them. So hey, let's maybe just float it out there. Let's tell him that we have no intention of re-signing you. You'll not pursue your own trade. We're going to trade you because there's a lot of moving parts here. Let's say Rivers gets dealt to Tennessee. If I'm Tennessee, I got to have an extension in place
right
before the trade's made.
You would think.
Right,
to risk giving up, because you could, like I said, slap the franchise tag. Phillip Rivers made a bunch of money. Phillip Rivers could say, you know what, I've had enough, I'm going to walk away.
Yeah.
And you'd be in a situation where, I don't know if he's such
Plummer
a competitor if he'd do that. He doesn't strike me as Jake Plummer, though,
right?
Jake Plummer, what a goofball, man. We saw him out in Denver.
Yes,
we Denver did. Out in Phoenix for the Super Bowl. Doesn't strike me at all as Phillip Rivers like.
No, but Phillip Rivers strikes me as the type of guy that if he really is, I don't want to go to L.A., like he does strike me as the type of guy that would potentially say, all right, you guys want to move the team to L.A.? I'm not playing there. I'm not. He does strike me as the type of guy that would walk away if he felt like he really didn't want to play.
Or at least
in that
force their hand, force a trade, right. Force some way out of the situation.
He has that kind of attitude about him that I believe him when he says he doesn't want to play in L.A.
Greg Cosell yesterday was on. I think he was on with Paul Kaharsky in Nashville yesterday and said that if it came down to Mettenberger v. Winston, he'd take Mettenberger over Winston. Right? And they're very similar quarterbacks, and they are in certain ways. They're really pocket quarterbacks. I think Winston's he's not fleet of foot. He's certainly more mobile than Mettenberger. Mettenberger has a bigger arm than Winston does. Winston's arm is plenty big, but Mettenberger's got a cannon of an arm. And said if it were a choice between the two, he'd rather have Zach Mettenberger. And he said he'd definitely rather have Winston than Mariota. So clearly he'd rather have Mettenberger than Mariota. Obviously, if the Tennessee Titans feel anything close to what Cosell is saying, they're going to be looking to trade out of that spot, you would think, or just to grab the best player that they can get. But, you know, they've certainly given the indication that they like Mettenberger, which makes it interesting. I wonder what Cosell feels about Bortles compared to all of these guys. Because last year, Dave Caldwell said right after the draft, we felt if Bortles had returned to UCF for another year of seasoning, and was available against all the guys that were coming out, we think he'd be the best quarterback prospect in next year's draft, meaning this year's draft. I wonder what Cosell feels about that. He's widely respected.
Well, Jeremiah says that he'd be the third guy. I disagree with that.
Guy behind both the top two guys right now?
Yeah, I would have him one over Winston and Mariota.
Why?
Because pro-style offense.
Winston played in a pro-style offense.
Baggage.
Okay.
And also, he's built for the position, whereas I would have some concerns on Mariota being able to stand up to the...
So the baggage of Winston would be... If you took the baggage aside and it was just player for player.
It'd be tight, but everybody talks about those Winston interceptions. To me, that is a little bit of a flag. I mean, was he trying to, there are a couple of tip balls and whatever, but a lot of turnovers. I mean, so.
You know what, you probably saw this. I saw this stat this week. You know what Dan Marino's TD to interception ratio was his senior year?
Like 1-3.
17-23.
And he fell to 26th.
He did fall to 26th, but he also, with 17 touchdowns, 23 picks, he finished top 10 in the Heisman voting at Pitt. What was that, the dark ages? Man, I mean, I remember Dan Marino at Pitt. He was coming off a year where he threw 30, I think it was 37-23 as a junior. So he threw a ton of picks, but,
And that draft was loaded at quarterback, too.
Obviously.
That was a lot of guys.
It wasn't as loaded as some teams thought.
Right, but that's a lot of quarterbacks to push you down the board in 83, as opposed to this year where it's two guys, right? Can you handle the baggage of Jameis Winston because you like him as a player more than you like Marcus Mariota? Because those are your choices. If you want a quarterback
in this
year's draft.
You didn't have Elway, Jim Kelly as alternatives. You didn't have three Hall of Fame alternatives in the first round.
No.
And you certainly didn't have the legendary Ken O'Brien. To push around. And
poor Ken.
Who else did they have in the first round that year? Who's the college football?
Blackledge.
Todd Blackledge, right? And there was one more that won the first round that year. Who was it?
You mentioned O'Brien?
I did mention O'Brien. Todd Blackledge. Was there a Collins?
Eason.
Tony Eason. That's who it was. Yes. Tony's looking. He's cheating.
I am.
But that's who it was. Tony Eason. So, and Marino went sixth out of the sixth.
Yeah, he went 27th overall to Miami.
Yeah, didn't win a Super Bowl, so just as good as Ken O'Brien, I suppose.
All right, they're
just as good as Ken O'Brien. All right, moving along, we will come back and we will hear. Let's get Dave on the line. I think he's still hanging there, so we'll get to that, and then we'll come back and we'll hear from Blake and Gus Bradley yesterday at Sawgrass as they get ready for all season workouts to get underway on Monday. Dave, good morning. How are you?
Good, man. I want to talk about the Who real quick and the draft.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I was stationed in West Germany at the time, back in the late 70s, and got a chance to get two tickets to see them in Frankfurt. And I liked them when I went to see them, okay? Walked out of that auditorium without question, the most powerful rock and roll band of all time. It's not even close. So I have to get that out.
They're my favorite of all time. Whether they're the most powerful, whatever, they're my favorite band of all time. I mean, that's a personal preference thing, but I've always had the Who at the top of the list with U2 in the second spot.
Yeah. You might want to check out one of Townsend's solo albums called All the Good Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes. It's a great album. But anyway, yeah, I find the draft to be the most boring time of the year for the NFL, as far as it's 3 or 4 months of just pure speculation. And it's made guys like Mel Kiper a fortune of dough. And nobody knows, except for maybe, you know, the first pick or something. I mean, nobody thought we were going to take Blake Bortles last year. And all this, but as far as who I would like to see them take, you know, everybody's talking about it's defense. We need defense. No, we need to score some points. Did we? How many times did we score more than 20 points last year? Maybe twice?
Not many.
Well, get Amari Cooper, okay? Is he the real deal as far as receivers?
Doesn't matter what I think. Matters what Dave Caldwell thinks. I mean, he looks like a hell of a player, but, you know.
Cooper would be bold. I mean, I agree with the caller. This team needs to find guys who can help them score more points. They felt they've done that with Julius Thomas. They feel that Blake Bortles will help them do that with another year. So,
look, if Dave
Caldwell, they can also get receivers. You know, they can also get a quality receiver in the second or third round.
You got to weigh that. But if Dave Caldwell thinks Amari Cooper is the best talent out there and he's a true number one type receiver, he's got to be able to reshuffle your depth chart. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got to go right to the top and be a clear-cut NFL number one type wide receiver. And if you feel he can do that, then I think he would consider him at that spot.
I mean, it would not surprise me.
It would surprise me a little, wouldn't shock me. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think if they're at three, I think they do take a defensive line man of some kind. But then again, last year we thought it was Sammy Watkins or Khalil Mack seemed to be where the speculation was centering, right, mm-hmm. For the most part. So Blake Bortles was the pick. You know, maybe you'll get your wish, Dave. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back, hear from Gus and Blake next up. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Actually, headed to go meet up with the guys and throw right now over at Bishop Kinney. So excited. You know, guys are starting to trickle back in, and we're looking forward to it.
Jaguar quarterback Blake Bortles yesterday out at Sawgrass, ready to get back to work. Monday, the official first day of off-season workouts for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'll get a chance to integrate some of his new teammates as well. Let's hear a couple more thoughts from Blake and Gus Bradley, and then a sizzling hot take on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line coming in. We'll get to that as well. Blake weighing in on his thoughts. Free agency has gone by. We got the draft coming up. What does he think about all that's going on?
They've done an unbelievable job. The free agents they brought in, you know, we'll have an unbelievable draft. Look forward to it. You know, kind of the first time in this situation of watching the draft. So I'm excited for it. I know they'll do great, and I can't wait to get started with everybody from last year returning and all the new guys as well.
Yeah, I talked about it when we saw him at the Super Bowl, but he looks so refreshed. Like, just going into this offseason, that was just a month, basically, after the season had ended. And seeing him and the difference between that and the guy we saw in this building in December, kind of dragging around, he was just tired.
I did not know he was a lefty golfer, Tony. Yeah. That's a big thing I learned about Blake Bortles from yesterday.
But just tired. In a real offseason, instead of getting ready for all that extra work you have to do as a potential draft pick, Blake Bortles talked about that yesterday, too. The difference between his offseason last year and the offseason now.
It was totally different, I definitely liked it more. I definitely liked that I didn't have to train to run a 40 or anything like that. I could focus on doing quarterback things and getting better physically and mentally. And went out to California for a while and got a lot of work done and a lot of help. So there's still a lot that needs to be done, but it's a process and it'll continue to come.
All right, Gus Bradley out there yesterday as well was asked about the buzz. Is it growing here? Does he notice the excitement growing in the building here at Everbank Field as the draft gets closer?
We are. You know, it's really exciting. I mean, there's a lot of good players coming out this year, and we're picking at really good spots. And, you know, no different than the other years where we got everybody involved. You know, it's exciting to go in there in an offensive meeting. We have all the offensive coaches, the scouts, Dave, myself. Such a collaborative effort. And then the afternoons, you know, the defense. And we go through the defensive side of the ball and special teams. So, yeah, it's really, it's getting to that point now where we understand the process. Now it's just a matter of going through it.
Bradley also asked if there's anything new regarding the two most recent free agent visits here in Jacksonville. The center was Newski and Greg Jennings.
Right. No news right now. But, yeah, I really enjoyed both of them, though. You know, obviously guys that have done some very good things in the league. Really enjoyed our conversations, and we'll just see where it takes us from now.
You think it's with both those guys? We talked about this, I think, with you, Ryan, last week in terms of Greg Jennings. Maybe it was with Johnny O. But the feeling we have is that, all right, you look at Greg Jennings, you see where you stand. He's not a priority like Randall Cobb would have been a priority, or they tried to make him a priority. And you see how the draft shakes out now, right? 2 weeks go by, maybe you draft Philip Dorsett. Maybe you draft some other guy to play the slot, and then the need for Greg Jennings is gone. Maybe you don't come out of it, and things line up a different way, you go different directions, and then you kind of revisit it. You think it's that way with both of those guys?
Well, definitely with Jennings. I mean, I think what they've been spending the time on is, you know, just guessing is, hey, Jerry Sullivan, who are your top five slot receivers in this draft? Where, you know, and then it's Dave and the personnel staff. Okay, where do you think they're going to go? Do they have a chance to get one of those guys that would be the same as Jennings? Or do they think those guys are going to be off the board before they feel they have a shot to take one? Then you go sign the veteran. So, I mean, I think if draft weekend comes and he's not signed here, I think it makes it a little bit of a longer shot that he would be here.
Well, to me, I think he's looking at the same thing too. Probably, like, he wants to go in. He's had the Saints are next up, according to reports. He's had the Panthers and the Dolphins look at him as well, and he's probably sitting there. Nobody's offering the kind of money he's looking for, obviously, at this moment. So He probably wants to see how it shakes out. Maybe, you know what, if Carolina doesn't get one, their depth chart opens up a little bit more than some other places. Maybe that moves to the top of his list. Maybe Carolina drafts a guy, and then other situations become attractive. So as much as the Jags are doing that, I think he's probably doing the same thing with these teams too.
Mm-hmm. And one thing Dave Caldwell was accurate about, he said 3 weeks ago at the owners' meetings that he's going to take a lot of visits, and this is going to stretch out a while, which has been totally the case. So it's almost like he likes being pursued a little bit, but you know, he's probably had to move his asking price down a couple notches. And if I'm him, I get into a camp before the draft.
All right, moving on with Gus Bradley, talked about the excitement level for him with the off-season program getting ready to get started on Monday.
Oh, yeah, anytime you get everybody in here and you get a chance to see that camaraderie starting to build, you know, the first team meeting and they get a chance. We'll start it off with, you know, individual meetings. They'll get a chance to sit down with their coach one-on-one and go through kind of a vision process or, you know, a point of attack tape. And just it starts that whole conversation, that whole communication part. And we've got some new coaches that need to have those one-on-one meetings as well.
And kind of following up on that, the free agent signings that the Jags have had, obviously these guys haven't had an opportunity to work with any of those guys at all. So we talked about working with those guys that will be coming in as part of this signing class for the first time in the upcoming offseason program.
Right, yeah, we'll introduce those guys. And, you know, we've got some new additions. And I think now the part of it is just bringing this team together as fast as possible and getting them to work as one. And I think we've got a lot of guys that are taking care of themselves in the offseason, making sure they're right. And we asked them to have their best off season, and that was really our objective, and they come in strong and continue that once they all come in.
All right, 2 weeks out from the draft, my goodness. Maybe we should talk more about it, as a matter of fact. 2 weeks ago, we're asking you today to tweet us or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You can always call us as well at 641-1010, who you would like to see the Jags select with their first pick. Whenever that first pick comes off the board, right now, obviously, it's three. If there's a trade-back scenario, although we think as time grows closer, I don't think there's going to be a trade-back scenario or much of one. If there is, it's likely not going to be for Marcus Mariota because I think he's going to be off the board. Maybe for Leonard Williams, but I don't feel that that's a strong possibility. But regardless, who you would like to see be the first pick for the Jags and who you actually 2 weeks out think it will be when they first turn a card in at the NFL draft in 2 weeks. This one in. Make us all feel good on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, okay? This 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock show, Jaguars Today, just helping you out on that one. This 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock show should be canceled. There's only so much you can say about the Jaguars' number three pick, and I think it's been said the last 4 months. These guys' show is a waste of your airtime. There's a sizzling hot one for you right there. It's a show called Jaguars Today.
Yeah.
In which we talk about the Jaguars
and the NFL at large. And it's a show that we started because, I don't know, we're the flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Why not spend 2 hours a day dedicated to the team that we now are broadcasting on a weekly basis? Why not?
But as I always, if you feel like it's wasting your time, you have the way to remedy that. It's called the radio dial. Switch it. There you go. All right? Because it ain't going anywhere. All right? Jaguars today. Long live Jaguars today.
Two more weeks, buddy.
Two more. And I may extend it, Tony, beyond that just for this texter.
2016 draft.
With the sizzling take. We'll start in on the 2016 draft come mid-May. We'll get a chance to digest this one, Ryan.
Let's talk spring football.
And let's just jump right in to the 2016 draft. Maybe I really do miss the opportunity to be breaking down the first round of the NBA playoff matchups. He said facetiously.
Well, I was about to say.
Yes, he said facetiously.
You'd be alone in that one.
All right. We will come back and we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Your reaction to what you think is going to happen and what you would like to see happen 2 weeks from tonight. Unlike Ryan O'Halloran, I'm going to the NFL draft.
Is that official?
Thursday and Friday. It is now official. It's official that I got my plane ticket. So if they cancel those plans, I may go and, sleep on somebody's couch, but I think we're locked in for at least Thursday and Friday of the NFL draft. All right, coming back, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. Just grooving right now, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
You came up with a few more Joan Jett songs, by the way.
Makes me want to watch Whiplash. Did you see Whiplash?
No.
Nominated Whiplash for Best Picture this year?
No.
Check it out. It's pretty good.
What's that about?
It's about a jazz drummer.
Oh, yeah. You say that and you're like giggling like I should know that. I don't know. I never heard of the movie. That wasn't the one where Thor played a race car driver. That wasn't this year, right?
No, I like that movie.
Did you like that one?
Rush? Yeah.
All right.
This was Whiplash.
That wasn't this year anyway, was it?
No, that was last year.
Okay.
So Whiplash with the Oscar winner.
Yeah.
The Oscar winner.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons won for Best Supporting Actor.
I knew you didn't know his name. Who's J.K. Simmons?
He's the guy.
He's the guy in Whiplash.
Yeah, he's...
He played the dad in Juno.
This is going well. I saw Juno. I don't remember the dad, though.
He was the white supremacist in Oz. Like the lead white supremacist.
Oh, that dude.
Yeah,
J.K. Simmons. That guy. Okay, now I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I just didn't know his name. He's a good actor.
He is good.
Yeah, he's very good. All right, moving right along. Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight. Maybe before we get to that, let's get a caller two in here. And even before that, text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, a rebuttal. Long live Jaguars today. Tell that joker to go kick rocks. That's from Aaron. Loyal Jaguars today listener. Also got
kick rocks.
Go kick rocks. That's a good expression from Chris G.
Feels like a 50s put down.
It is.
Hey, go kick rocks.
Hey, go kick rocks, kid. Yeah. At Chef Jags said that. What did he say? He said Jaguars today is the best show on radio. Come on, man. Sorry, Prosser and the Drill. Laugh out loud. Okay. 1010XL in general. Fine. Hey, it's okay. Express your ridiculous viewpoints all you like.
It could be worse. People could be saying, I second that guy.
It's true. I'm sure some of them are. If you really second that guy, you wouldn't be listening right now.
Right.
Right? I mean, if you really feel that way, don't listen if it hurts you that much. All right. Let's go to, what do we got? Jarrell up next here on 1010XL. What's up, Jarrell? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's up?
All right. So I have a scenario. Now I'm going to predict the number three pick as well as the second round pick that we have, but also I will do a trade scenario just in case we do get the trade. All right,
go right ahead.
All right, now number three pick, if he's still there, which I banking he will, we're going to take Leonard Williams with the number three overall pick.
Okay.
And in the second round, number 36 pick, I'm predicting that we take Philip Dorsett from the University of Miami in the second round.
Okay.
Now, the draft scenario trade, I'm predicting that the Browns will use their two first round picks to move up and draft Mariota.
All right, with Tennessee, you're talking about.
Huh?
You're talking about trading up with the Jags or with Tennessee? This is your other contingency with the Jags. All right.
Well, with the Jags. That's what I'm predicting.
Okay. Well, you're covering your bases is what you're doing. You can't predict both will happen because they both can't happen, but I got your point. Look, that's the team I want because I want those two first round picks if the Jags move out of there. But sure. I don't think it's going to happen because I think the deal, if there's as much interest in Mariota as seems to be building, and maybe there's not, you know, we don't know. Could be smoke from teams that are like, we don't want him, but we want to make sure he goes in the top five because we're counting how many pass rushers there are and one of them will fall to us in that scenario. Then the deal's going to get done with Tennessee, I think, if there really is that market. And then if that's the case, you know. And look, if he falls to three, I hope the Jags do get some kind of blockbuster deal.
Me too.
And I hope it's centered around those two first-round picks. Or either that or it just requires you to move back a handful of spots. See, I don't think Washington's making a move up for a quarterback.
I would agree with that because this is a new GM. And one of the reasons why he is the GM is that their other time moving up backfired.
Correct. And, you know, I saw one draft. It might have even been the 7-round mock we were taking a look at that projected the Jets trading up to Oakland to get Mariota with him lasting that long on the board. I wouldn't feel like the Jets would feel like they need to leap Washington either. Like, that wouldn't be the team that they'd have to leap. Of course, you have to risk, if you don't make that move, maybe somebody else slides in and makes the move.
Well, what'd be interesting to see happen, and this has been your thought a couple weeks ago, of it doesn't matter, let's say you're the Jets, don't trade to just above a team, trade as high as you can to make sure you get a guy.
Right.
Well, that's what's going to be interesting part is, let's say Mariota, let's say Tennessee takes Leonard Williams, because Arakpo is their Fowler. So it goes Winston, Williams. If you're the Jags sitting there, obviously you're open for business if somebody wants to come up Mariota. If you're the Jets, do you feel you need to leapfrog the Redskins? So do you trade the four? Do you trade the three? I mean, well, who do the Jets feel like they'll have to go to? I mean, if I'm them, I go to three just to get it over with.
Right. If you're going to go to four, might as well go to three and get it done. That's why I don't think he's sly. I think somebody, although Dave Caldwell, you get the feeling, right? To me, I get the feeling that he's a guy when he's locked in on this guy. Clearly, quarterback's a different story because that's so important, but he's not just going to move for the sake of the best deal that comes along. He's not going to do it unless it hits his threshold of what he wants in return.
And that's why I think ultimately they'll stay put. Last year they were locked in on that guy. They didn't want to risk moving down. I think this year they see, yes, it's a deep pass rushing class, but one rises above the others, and they're going to combine with them maybe are going to ask for an offer that another team won't bite on. So I think they stay at three and take, you know, and take a good player.
Unless that one that rises above the others goes at two, which there is the potential. If it's like there is the chance that Tennessee decides they don't like Mariota and instead of Williams they say Dante Fowler is their guy at that number two spot. There's that chance of that happening. And if the Jags, if that was their above the other guy's guy, now it makes it a little more lucrative to think about moving down.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes Winston Fowler, then you're thinking, okay, you know, if Williams wasn't, you know, the number one. I think if Leonard Williams is there at three and they're not interested, I think there will be a market for him.
And
you know, I have a hard time saying, why don't you want that guy? But
right, yeah. but look, I don't have a problem. If you're willing to trade – if Mariota's there, let's say Fowler does go, right? I mean, I'm willing for them to trade, period, because I don't know if Williams or Dante Fowler or Vic Beasley, if any one of these guys is such a sure better thing than the combination of guys, let's say you could get with the 12-19 or with the 6 and the Jets' second round pick or something like, you know, equivalent to that. I'm willing to take the slightly lesser player to get the extra player or players on the back end. So, you know, Leonard Williams, I wouldn't see, because there are some pretty good defensive tackles in this draft. Mm-hmm. And I know some people look at him, you know, the versatility is a big factor with him, but I don't see people being willing to come up as far as they would to get Leonard Williams as they would to get a quarterback, right? So if they did, if there was a trade for Leonard Williams, I think it would keep them in that top maybe 8 picks or so, you know, something in that range, if that makes sense. So we'll see how it plays out. By the way, I wasn't reading the text to pander to everyone to send us nice texts.
No.
But we appreciate the flood of ones that we just got in.
Mike is going to be putting these on the wall of the studio.
No, they're very nice. I appreciate that for people sending that. So that's nice. I'm not going to read them all, but we read them internally, and we appreciate all of you guys and your support. We know you. We hope you appreciate the show and like the show, and that's why we do it. Let's get a couple more quick calls, and we'll get some reaction to the question of the day. Bill is up next with a trade scenario. Bill, give it to us quick. What do you have? Hello, Bill.
I just talked to him. Bill? I'm not sure what Bill is doing.
All right, how about EJ? EJ Manuel checking in with a trade scenario. Whoa. EJ.
Tell us about Nate Hackett.
What can we do for
you? EJ Manuel. All right. What if San Diego Chargers call up Dave Caldwell and say, Phillip Rivers and trade first-round draft picks. Do you take them?
Well, only if they're going to flip Rivers to somewhere else. I mean, I think they're sort of set at quarterback.
Right, but he's saying, would you do it, I mean, in the short term? Look, we sit here and say the Titans should give up the chance to have their young Mariota because you could get Phillip Rivers, who's a known commodity. You're going to get 3 or 4 good years out of him, you know, presuming he stays healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a developmental guy in the wings. I don't think the Jags would do it because I think they are committed to Blake Bortles. But I mean, I think it's a reasonable question to ask, right? If you're truly about competition, you have a chance to get an established Pro Bowl quarterback and not give up a first-round pick. But in his scenario, just drop 14 spots. The thing is, they're not doing that deal. I don't think they'd give Phillip Rivers and the 17 to go up and get Mariota at 2. I don't think they're giving that much. I think if they're giving up Phillip Rivers, they're going to probably feel like that's almost enough to give up.
If the Chargers say, we'll flip first-round picks and we'll give you Eric Weddle, that's a player you can use.
You take Eric Weddle over Phillip Rivers?
Well, I think it fills a need on this team, makes him better in the short term.
I get, but do you think in the short term Phillip Rivers makes him better than Blake Bortles at quarterback? Again, this is fantasy land.
Yeah, that's a stupid call, first of all.
Why is it a stupid call?
Because let's get into like realistic hypotheticals here.
No, we play the what if game all the time.
But not about, you know, it's like that one isn't a good one.
It's a hypothetical, so I'm not going to say it's a ridiculous hypothetical. I mean, we throw crazy stuff at the wall all the time.
Yeah,
so
we went through that last year where you blew up on somebody. It was right before we came and started Jaguars Today. Someone called and said, why are y'all talking about hypotheticals?
What the hell else are you supposed to do?
Right, and
but
Mike,
but there's good and bad.
Mike just went off for 2 hours. He was like, oh no, we're going to talk about something hypothetical. Like, he started warning people for 2 hours.
All right. Bill, you're next up here, and I hope you have a brilliant trade scenario for us. What do you got?
Well, listen, if we're going to trade backwards, in which, back into the draft, I'm 100% in favor of, especially because it's so deep at pass rush. But if it meant that we could get a decent pass rush and pick up Nick O'Leary, I'm all over it because we haven't had a pass catching tight end since, you know, for forever.
All right. You do realize they signed one for a lot of money, right?
Well,
Julius Thomas. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
All right. I'm sorry, Bill. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we're running short on time. How do you rate those two trade scenarios head to head?
Well, I almost like the Rivers one better.
Thank you. I knew you would. See, I knew you would. Nick O'Leary is short. He's slow. He's a hell of a college player. He'll get picked at some point. Nick O'Leary is like a fifth-round pick.
Yeah. Fourth, fifth-round pick.
Well, if we've got 10, like, if we come up on a break.
We got a couple
of
minutes.
Okay, let's if we're talking about trade-down scenarios, another question would be, how far down are you willing to trade? You know, regardless of what you pick up. I mean, I mean, if you trade out of the top 15 and pick up an extra second, is that worth it?
Oh no, it's going to be way
exactly.
more.
Exactly.
Let's say, and I'm not, it's hypothetical. Okay.
This is a good one.
Hypothetical. Let's say a team in the high teens, 19, 20, whatever, says we'll give you first, second, next year's first. It's going to take something like that. Dave Caldwell's not trading out of the top 10 unless he gets multiple first-round picks, in my opinion. So the idea that a second-round pick would be enough to move up, no. I'm not in favor of that.
See, if they move down, I don't see him moving outside of the top 10.
But if they did, again, if they went to 10, St. Louis wanted to come up and get Amari Cooper, right? They just loved him, right? Had to have him. Then I think you're in a scenario where they would get the 10th pick and they'd get St. Louis's first rounder next year. I don't think Dave Caldwell's playing around. I don't think he would take less than two first round picks, whether they both come this year a la Cleveland or one this year, one next year. I don't think, you know, you're talking, you want to move back to six to the Jets for a second round pick? Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah. But I think you start getting out of that range of the top core of elite guys and you're going to have to get some serious payback. All right. We got to get to the fan feedback spotlight. So Tony, we asked people today, who do you want to see be the first pick? And who do you think will be the first pick, and what do we get?
From Mike, I want a pass rusher not named Shane Ray. Ultimately, I think they take a pass rusher not named Shane Ray. From Isaiah, Vic Beasley and Vic Beasley. From Nick, he wants Vic Beasley. Actually, Vic Beasley. Beasley fits perfectly in the defense. What did you expect, he says. From Eric, he said, want trade with Cleveland and get Dupree and Gurley. Will Leonard Williams great?
I like that.
Either way. From Cristiano, I would like them to take Vic Beasley trading down. I think they take him at three. From David, imagine Cooper, A-Rob Lee, and JT on the field at the same time, but they might go best pass rusher. From Demetrius, best player available, Leonard Williams, but it's looking more and more like Vic Beasley is the pick at the Leo. From Michael, Vic Beasley or a trade down for picks with the Browns.
I love that last tweet. I don't mean to interrupt you, but no. it's looking like.
Well, I mean, I asked DeRocco that because DeRocco said right now, it says it looks like they're leaning towards Fowler. I'm like, how do we know it's right? No, I he just sewed his mouth shut. We should have brought this up a long time ago, Tony, if we knew it was going to have that effect.
Here's what it's looking like. Here's what it's looking like.
You took the stitches out.
Here's what it's looking like. They're going to make a damn pick in the top 10. That's what my expert opinion is. They're going to make a pick at three.
All right, all right.
Vic Beasley or a trade down for picks with the Browns looking from like Mariota or Atlanta for Williams from Zariah. We got trade for Shane Ray or Trey Waynes and Cameron Irving, late peas, Shaw, Josh Shaw, free safety, Colvin-type pick. That one's a confusing tweet, but thank you for the submission.
I'm not used to not being the bad guy in my own show. I'm really not, and I don't know how to deal with this right now. Let's see. Johnny Crum is a Seminole fan. I'd want them to take a trade and grab Rashad Green or Cam Irving. With the first pick? I don't think so there. Adrian Jackson, I want them to trade down for a massive picks, end up with Vic Beasley and Todd Gurley in the first round. Hey, somebody's been reading Roto-World's Josh Norris. Cameron Franklin, I think they should trade with the Browns, get the 12th and 19th, get an edge rusher like Shane Ray at 12, then Gurley at 19. Let's see, Joe Judon, what the best running back available, Melvin Gordon over Gurley. The injury risk, since it's a common thought, running back shouldn't go that high. Proven by the last running back taken at three was a bust. What does that prove? I mean, I guess quarterback shouldn't go number one because DeMarcus Russell was a bust, right? I mean, whatever. I don't think it's proven. I think it's a trend. But Jason Abarco, Leonard Williams is a player I want. Caldwell's a smart man. If he's there, he'll take Williams regardless of need. He knows he can get an edge rusher in round two. And many more coming in on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We appreciate all of you, particularly most of you texters today on the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Most of you. I even appreciate the ones that don't like us. It helps us check ourselves, Tony, is what it does, and gives us some fodder to solicit happy tweets and texts sent our way. Ryan O'Halloran, what do you got coming up in the next few days with Jaguars, with Jacksonville.com?
Well, we'll start our draft series on Sunday.
You can't talk about draft. We've been talking about that for 4 months. How can you do that?
Yeah, we're gonna like fight through it.
All right.
No hypotheticals.
We're gonna present some hypotheticals.
Which way do you think it's leaning right now, would you say?
Well, from what it looks like. From
What are your sources? What does Dave Caldwell tell you? Who's he told you he's got at the top of his board right now?
A player.
A player. An impact player.
An available player.
All right. So draft stuff all weekend long. What a shock. Yeah, you would have that covering the Jags.
So it will put a position a day. And then we'll obviously have some stuff with the start of the off-season program, guys back in town next week, and yeah, we'll go from there.
All right, all opinions welcome, even if we vehemently disagree with them, at least speaking for myself. For Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey, wrapping up Jaguars Today on this Thursday. Tomorrow, we got the Friday Top 5, your top 5 favorite songs by The Who, as they're in concert here in Jacksonville this weekend. Also have Dane Brugler from NFLDraftScout.com. David Garrard will be in studio. All that coming up. And, of course, next, we've got XL Primetime right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.